This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Doucet Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. As the controversy over Planned Parenthood heats up with the release of more secretly recorded videos, New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen took to the Senate floor to defend the organization.
Make no mistake about it. The group that's responsible for these deceptive videos is motivated by a single purpose: to limit access to abortion services.
In presidential politics, candidates continue to descend upon the Granite State in anticipation of upcoming debates. Hillary Clinton made a stop in Nashua, where she outlined her plan to address climate change. But when asked about the Keystone XL pipeline, she declined to take a position.
This is President Obama's decision, and I am not going to second guess him because I was in a position to set this in motion, and I do not think that would be the right thing to do.
And in New Hampshire politics, lawmakers approved a grant to fund the state's drug czar through the end of the year. This despite misgivings from Republicans over the current job holder, Jack Wozniak. Republican Jeannie Forrester spoke with WMUR.
Based on what I've heard, what I've seen, and the folks that I've talked to, I don't have a high degree of confidence.
It's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Dean, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Gary Reno, Statehouse reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. And Gary, thank you for taking time out. I appreciate it.
Good to be here, Laura.
Well, and gentlemen, let's start with that Planned Parenthood story. Lots of controversy. Dean, just please remind us what this is all about.
Sure. The controversy centers around a series of videos that have been released by a group called Center for Medical Progress. It's an anti-abortion group, and they essentially filmed many hours of conversation with abortion providers, staff, administrators with Planned Parenthood, and then put these edited videos out for people to see. And the issue surrounds fetal tissue donation and whether or not Planned Parenthood is doing anything that is illegal in providing tissue for research. I guess they get the costs of that covered. So depending on you know, your position, you watch these videos and it kind of seems like they're discussing selling fetal tissue, but Planned Parenthood says no, that's sort of standard tissue donation for research purposes. Some people want to donate for research purposes. It's a legal thing that they do. So it's kind of blown up into this big controversy with Republicans in Congress threatening to defund Planned Parenthood if Planned Parenthood does not stop providing abortions. Federal money doesn't go for that right now, but they do provide a lot of other health care services to individuals. So that's sort of the larger picture. And Planned Parenthood has said, you know, there's nothing illegal about this. It's sort of standard tissue donation procedures. We recoup our costs of doing that. But they've acknowledged that kind of the tone of these videos can be a little bit off-putting because it's just sort of their kind of everyday work being recorded and put out there.
Well, it's a big national story, but Gary Reno, how's it playing out locally here in New Hampshire?
Well, several things. I mean, it's kind of a case of bad timing in that there's a Planned Parenthood contract coming up before the Executive Council, probably next week or the 2 weeks after that. Planned Parenthood has had a contract with a state has contracted with Planned Parenthood for many years. They don't just provide abortion services. They provide a lot of other services, lab work, cancer screening, and so on. And they have their five clinics throughout the state where they provide a lot of these healthcare services. And they've been a longtime provider along with several other organizations. And that is coming up probably this next Wednesday or maybe 2 weeks from now. And consequently, there's been a big push. There was a big rally at the State House this week where New Hampshire Right to Life was the sponsor. And it turned out probably a little over 100 people. And the message was stop the contract from going through. The executive council right now is split basically 2-2. And Executive Counselor Chris Sununu is the swing vote. And so there was a lot of activity to say, get a hold of Counselor Sununu, put the pressure on Counselor Sununu, because he's going to be the one who's going to decide this one way or the other.
Interesting. So when people talk about public dollars, you know, should or should not go to Planned Parenthood, Dean Spiliotis, it's this contract that Gary's describing. That's what they're talking about,
to run these clinics
around the state.
Right. And as it is, the federal dollars don't go for providing abortion services. It goes for things like family planning, cancer screening, birth control, STD testing, et cetera. So a variety of other services that are provided. I should mention that Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, which is the group up here, is not involved in the fetal tissue donation program. So it does not directly affect providers in our area. Democrats have traditionally had a strong relationship with Planned Parenthood. Initially, both Senator Shaheen and Hillary Clinton came out and said that these videos were disturbing. Since then, Democrats have really kind of circled the wagons around Planned Parenthood. They've come out in strong defense of it. Hillary Clinton has come out in defense of it. Jean Shaheen has. They say these videos are highly edited. There's nothing illegal about tissue donation, that the tone is unfortunate. But it basically was just sort of a big setup. So this is one of those classic political battles. We'll see Republicans in Congress try to defund it. President Obama hasn't said whether he would veto that. I assume he would, but we'll see.
This has come up before in New Hampshire, right, Gary?
Yes,
a couple years back, the contract?
4 years ago, the executive council then, which was all Republican, turned down a Planned Parenthood, a very similar Planned Parenthood contract on a 3-2 vote. And eventually the federal government went kind of around the state and awarded the contract directly to Planned Parenthood. That's going to be a little bit more difficult this time because there's a bit more state money involved than there was in the one 4 years ago.
Got some Facebook commentary on this story, of course, and I'll share a few of these with you, although there's a lot more. Christina says 97% of what Planned Parenthood does is health and reproductive counseling services. 97%. If you don't want to use Planned Parenthood, don't, but do not deny these services to the millions of people who do use them every year. Gigi says, I cannot believe this woman would even think that selling baby parts is okay. Very disturbing. When she says this woman, I think she's talking about Jean Shaheen. This is in response to the Shaheen sound that we played. And then Kevin says, wait till the other 12 tapes are released. This gets progressively worse for Planned Parenthood, and Shaheen keeps amazing us with her stupidity. Thank you for the Facebook comments. And Dean Spiliotis, yeah. Is there another shoe that's going to drop here?
Apparently they have. There's a lot of video. And so I'm sure this is something that has been kind of planned to sort of, you know, roll out as we go into the fall and winter election season. Yeah, apparently we will see additional ones. You know, at some point it's just going to be kind of part of the larger pitch battle between Republicans and Democrats on this issue. And as Gary has noted, it's an issue we've dealt with, many times before. This is not something that Planned Parenthood is unfamiliar with, these kinds of political battles. The question is whether or not Republicans will make any progress nationally at defunding them. But, you know, this is one of those core litmus test issues between, Democrats and Republicans, and this is just sort of more fuel on that particular fire.
Well, I have to ask you one more political question about this, and then sure. I do want to talk about the drug czar. And I'll ask you, Gary, you mentioned Chris Sununu, a Republican executive mm-hmm. counselor from that well-known Sununu political right. family. Many people think Chris Sununu may be considering a run for governor. How does this whole Planned Parenthood litmus test play into that?
Well, 4 years ago, he was the swing vote. I mean, he was the one who voted. He was one to vote against. To award the contract. So he was one of the two Republicans who voted to let the contract go. So I think most people think that he's probably leaning that way. But because of all the pressure and, as you say, because of the possibility of running for governor, I think people look at this as an opportunity to put a lot of pressure on him.
Well,
one way or the other.
I want to also ask you guys about something else pretty hot that happened at the State House this week. And Gary, I'll turn to you first. Questions from state senators about the drug czar. Now, just remind us, Gary, please, what is the position for? And is this a new thing for the Granite State?
Well, it is a fairly new. I mean, it's new this time around. We've had drug czars before, but this is since about January, we've had this this position. It's funded through the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. It's not actually funded through the state right now. And the drug czar, if you will, is it's Jack Wozniak. And he has come under fire from various places. Manchester was the first one to sort of raise issues about why isn't he doing more? Why isn't he meeting with us, police chief? Several other cities have done the same thing. Nashua was talking about that. Others were saying that he sort of hasn't been as visible or as out front as they think he should be, and they're questioning whether he has been doing quite the job that he should be doing, given the situation that the state finds itself in right now.
Well, and yeah, remind us of the situation. I mean, that's the whole reason that this job was created, right, Dean? I mean, we're in the middle of something quite scary here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, there's been this big uptick in heroin usage and overdoses and a variety of substances. It's something that's even being talked about at the national level. Hillary Clinton has mentioned it a number of times on her visits here. And so, you know, it's a lot of people were surprised that, I mean, this is a new position, and a lot of people didn't know about it. When you use the word drug czar, it kind of evokes this sort of very powerful figure. But it's a new position. It's funded by a charitable grant. They basically voted now to take another 6 months' worth of charitable funding. It's not kind of an integrated part of the state bureaucracy at this point. So the drug czar has received a lot of criticism for, you know, how sort of whether or not he's meeting enough with police chiefs, et cetera. He says he's met with 140 stakeholders. But I guess, you know, the tension in general is a good thing for kind of getting this process moving forward.
Well, and I want to remind everybody, you're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Dean Spiliotis and Gary Reno. More of our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup in a moment. First, let's check in with our summer car raffle. So, Gary, can the drug czar say to people in the state, you must do this, you must do this, you must do this, or is he sort of suggesting, coordinating, encouraging?
Well, I mean, he's out of the governor's office, so he has a certain amount of clout. It's not like he's in Health and Human Services or he's in some other agency. He's ostensibly in the governor's office, so he's going to be able to deal across various state agencies, various organizations. How much clout he has depends, I guess, on what the political climate is. But he obviously is there to take a look and say, well, we're doing things differently than we should be, that we are repeating services that we shouldn't be, what is the most effective programs that we have, and why hadn't we ought to be focusing on those and not spreading our money all over the place. I mean, because they're just at the fiscal committee meeting this week, there were three other contracts that dealt with drug abuse.
I wanted to ask you about that, Gary, because one of the big concerns about this state budget stalemate that we're in right now, still ongoing, is that money might not flow to substance abuse services. And everybody, bipartisan, seems to agree that this is important.
This is. I mean, the money that gets caught up in the whole issue with the budget is basically expansion of treatment and prevention programs, not necessarily what's in place, because there's plenty of stuff in place right now. And that's what these contracts were this week. There were two of them with the Department of Education dealing with six different school systems trying to target this problem. There was another one with the Health and Human Services, which was a more general contract across many different lines, treatment, prevention, education. And this is the sort of thing that he should be looking at. How is this money being used? Is it being used most effectively? And, I mean, that's going to take a little time to figure out, on it, obviously. It's not going to happen overnight.
Well, it does show you, Dean, that there is still some bipartisan consensus on some issues, including this substance abuse problem that New Hampshire is seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's gotten so much visibility. There's been so much reporting on it. Everything from the discussion of whether or not to provide more access to Narcan, which can stop an overdose, to finding used needles in city parks in Manchester. It's just gotten a lot of visibility, and we'll see if this drug czar can kind of move the whole process of helping forward.
Again, our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. And Ben joins us from Hudson. Hi, Ben. You're on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
So I just wanted to mention that the right to having an abortion or not is mixed up, obviously, with the access to birth control. And I just wanted to mention how it's a little bit self-defeating for the pro-life crowd who is very concerned about limiting the number of abortions to also deny access to birth control, in that really that gets into the other moral issue of whether or not people should be having sex for only reproduction or for enjoying it. So I just wanted to touch base on that and kind of show it's a little bit counterproductive.
So the whole thing is all wrapped up, Dean, into contraception, unplanned pregnancy, abortion. It's so hard to figure out. Thank you so much, Ben, for being with us.
And I mean, Ben certainly lays out the one side of the argument, and it is something, this whole kind of set of issues, not just a choice and abortion, but birth control and other types of women's issues, has been something traditionally that has kind of divided Republicans and Democrats. Some people believe it's helped provide Democrats with kind of a gender gap, more women typically voting Democratic, particularly younger women, single women. But it's just sort of an area that is very difficult to unpack. It's kind of very emotional. It's very ideological, and it's something that pops up every 4 years. We seem to be back having these same debates. It's really kind of a core debate between the parties.
Or every 2 years, really, Gary,
sure,
right? We've seen these in governor's elections. I remember Maggie Hassan when she ran against Over the Montaigne, the whole women's health thing.
Very big issue in some elections. Very big.
All right. Well, again, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter with your questions and comments for the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. More Friday New Hampshire News Roundup in just a moment. We will turn our attentions to the very busy primary presidential race here in the Granite State. Stay with us. This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. You can join us now with your questions and comments as we wrap up some of the top news stories of the week. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. I'm sitting down this week with Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com, and Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. Joining us now as we turn our attentions to the presidential primary campaign here in the Granite State is Paul Steinhauser, political director, political correspondent, and anchor for NH1 News. And Paul, great to see you.
Great to be here with you, Laura, and both of you guys.
Well, we've all been tracking these candidates, but you especially, Paul. Who were you following around New Hampshire this week?
I put a lot of miles on the car every week.
I bet you did.
This week we started out Monday. I spoke with Lindsey Graham and Martin O'Malley. Tuesday it was Hillary Clinton. I finally got – Clinton was the one candidate I hadn't spoke with yet, so I've now talked to all 21. And then Wednesday it was Chris Christie. Yesterday I was just kind of laying low.
Laying low. Well, and the Hillary Clinton interview got a lot of play, Paul. Just remind us of some of the themes that you hit on with former Secretary of State Clinton, and then we'll hear some sound from that interview as well.
The news she made was on Arctic drilling, because earlier in that day, she would not once again answer a yes or no question about the Keystone Pipeline. And she's explained very well why she won't answer that question, because A, she was involved as Secretary of State in the process, and B, she's waiting for the President and Secretary Kerry to weigh in. But The administration's already made their decision on Arctic drilling. They're allowing the resumption of that drilling. In fact, just last week, they allowed Shell Oil to start exploratory drilling 70 miles off the Alaska coast. It's a controversial issue. I asked her about it, and she definitely gave some daylight between herself and the president when it comes to that, saying she does not think it's a good move at all.
So Arctic drilling and the Keystone XL pipeline, right? Two other energy and climate issues, Paul.
Yep. The Keystone pipeline continues to be something that's really dogging her. All the other candidates, as well, a lot of Republican groups saying she's dodging. Why is she not answering the question? She's very clear with us in the media, though, saying why she will not do this until the president makes her decision. But it was very, very stark that on Tuesday at that town hall in Nashua, when that Republican who was a supporter of Keystone stood up and asked her the question, give me a yes or no answer. She did not give the yes. She did not give the no.
Well, we got some feedback from our listeners on that. Here's a Facebook comment from Veronica, who says, true politician avoids admitting she is pro-business only and does not really care for simple folks just to get the votes. Veronica says if she wins, this country is going down the drain for sure. Veronica, thank you for that Facebook comment. Here's an email that came in from Mike and Lee. Hillary Clinton's statements on the climate are important in the context of the 2016 elections. Mike says people should be aware that activity is building to make addressing the climate a very prominent issue here next year. Mike, thank you for the email. What about this, Dean Spiliotis? We've heard this before from environmental activists that this is the year that climate change is a big issue.
Well, they can certainly hope that that's the case. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was just looking yesterday at some data that, you know, you ask voters what are the most important issues to them in the election. Climate change, environment, not even in the top four. Economy, jobs, health care, terrorism, foreign policy. I mean, this is the way it is every presidential election. You know, the reality is, though, that Hillary Clinton is facing a lot of pressure from environmental groups on Keystone, on the Arctic drilling. There's some money to be had there. There's some political support to be had there. But in terms of, you know, whether or not it's going to be the decisive issue in the 2016 election, probably not, and it typically is not. Typically, these kinds of issues come in somewhere fifth or sixth on the most important issue in terms of voters as a whole.
Lots of other candidates to talk about, Republicans and Democrats. But one more question on Hillary Clinton. She's been talking more this time around about, yes, running as a woman for president in this country is a big deal. Here she is in your interview with her, Paul, talking about that.
No, I think it's hard when you first become a major presidential candidate as the first woman to do so, to know exactly how to assuage the concerns and questions that voters have. We never did it before. The 08 campaign in the Democratic primary was so historic because of President Obama's race, my gender. It was an incredible moment for all of us. And I think now, coming back at it again, I think the American public is more comfortable, and I certainly am, in saying, look, I want people to vote for me on my merits, and I think the fact that I am a woman is one of my merits, and I think it will make a big difference to how we connect with young girls and boys, and what I will stand for and fight for on behalf of working women, because after all, two-thirds of the minimum wage workers in America are women, and they deserve a better shot than what they're getting right now. Child care remains a problem, equal pay for equal work. I've lived it. I understand it. So I'm very proud to be running as a strong supporter of making sure women's rights and opportunities are given their full measure in this campaign and when I'm president.
So, Paul Steinhauser, again, that's Hillary Clinton in an interview with you, I think, up at the Apple Orchard here in Concord. Is that correct?
Yeah, Beach Hill, right next door in Hopkinton. That's where she had a grassroots rally later in the day after the town hall in Nashua. You've heard Hillary Clinton time and time again. This time around, very comfortable talking about her gender, saying it's not the main reason I'm running, but hey, it is a reason. Very different story back in 2008. She really never mentioned it until the day she dropped out at that rally in Washington, D.C., when she dropped out and talked about cracks in the glass ceiling. Very different story this time around.
Again, the number for you to join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup as we catch up on some of the big stories of the week around the Granite State, including right now, activity in the presidential primary, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. 800-792-6477. One of the other candidates that Paul mentioned is Lindsey Graham. And Dean Spiliotis, I wonder what you've been observing about Senator Graham on the campaign trail here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, Lindsey Graham seems to be having the time of his life. I think he was liberated by his recent re-election victory. I think he's probably realistic about the likelihood of being the nominee, but he has a clear perspective here, particularly on foreign policy, and he's going to push that. He's been doing a lot of retail politics in New Hampshire, and he's going to be, I think he's going to be back again but next week as well.
Paul?
Yeah, in fact, he's coming back this weekend, and he's teaming up with his good friend,
that's right, John McCain.
Yep. I asked about it back on Monday. He said, listen, I was John McCain's wingman back in 2000 and 2008 up here when he was running for the nomination. Now he's going to be my wingman. You're absolutely right. Lindsey Graham, first of all, he's a funny guy, one of the funniest candidates out there. He's having the time of his life. He's also getting a lot of attention now because of Donald Trump. He has been John McCain's biggest defender in this whole Donald Trump attacking John McCain saga. It's giving Lindsey Graham a lot more airtime, a lot more visibility, both on social media and on traditional media. And he was pretty funny. You know, when Donald Trump gave out Lindsey Graham's cell phone number, Lindsey Graham put out an amusing video showing the creative ways to destroy your cell phone.
A video that's gotten a lot of play that I have not seen yet. Yeah. Go ahead, Gary Reno, your thoughts on all the people that are traveling around. And since you're at the State House a lot, I wonder who's attracting attention among New Hampshire lawmakers.
Well, I mean, there obviously is a long parade through there, or at least trying to attract these people, various House members, various senators. So far, there really hasn't been a lot of people through the State House. It's pretty quiet this summer. And most people aren't around, so we haven't seen too many. Dr. Carson was in one day. A couple other people have been stopped by. We always stop by the press room, and they always seem to manage to do that right in the middle of when we're trying to get something, you know, on deadline, and so you don't really have much time to chat with them. But that's part of the New Hampshire scene. It's fun to be part of that.
Well, and it is really, really busy, and it's impressive. I do wonder, Dean Spiliotis, how New Hampshire and Iowa are kind of playing out. I mean, I look at the schedules every day. It seems like they're spending a lot of time in the Granite State. What about the, what's Iowa's nickname? Buckeye? Is it Buckeye? No,
Hawkeye.
That's Ohio.
Hawkeye.
Thank you, Paul.
Spent a lot of time out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it is the case that there, you know, as we've discussed before, particularly for Republicans, the two states have very different political complexions. The Iowa caucus is dominated by conservative evangelicals. I think something like 60 or 65% of caucus goers out there. So it's just a different mix in terms of the types of candidates that you would expect to do well out there. Interestingly enough, Donald Trump is doing quite well in both states. He's leading in polls here. And he's a close second to Scott Walker, who has kind of geographical advantages out there as governor of Wisconsin. So, but in general, there are certain candidates, you know, like Chris Christie or Lindsey Graham, John Kasich, some people suggest, maybe even Jeb Bush, who's doing reasonably well in both states, who is sort of a better fit to campaign here. So they are, you know, Chris Christie in particular has really sort of picked up the John McCain playbook, spending a tremendous amount of time here doing retail politics, trying to get his candidacy back on track. So, you know, both states are getting visits, but I think the different political complexions are having an impact on where certain types of candidates are spending most of their time. You'd expect somebody like a Mike Huckabee or a Ted Cruz to be kind of more focused on Iowa, where they're going to be more receptive to his message.
Well, and since you mentioned Chris Christie, he's held a lot of town halls here in the Granite State, like you said, Dean, like John McCain before him. Let's hear a little bit from Chris Christie at one of these town halls. This is where he's talking about the Iran deal that the Obama administration reached recently.
As 2 weeks ago today, the President of the United States got on television at 7 o'clock in the morning and told all of us that he had reached an agreement with Iran on nuclear weapons. And I can tell you, in a presidency that I think has been generally very disappointing, we're going to look back on that moment 2 weeks ago as the very worst moment of the Obama presidency.
So, Paul Steinhauser, how much are you hearing these candidates talk about this Iran deal?
Oh, nonstop.
Really?
All 17 Republican presidential candidates have been railing against the Obama administration and the president on this deal, saying it is horrible and it's going to lead to the destruction possibly of Israel. You heard Mike Huckabee's comments making some big controversy this week. As for Christie, you guys were just mentioning this. Christie's doing it the New Hampshire way. I guess it's his only avenue, but he's been up here. This is his sixth. He was up here this week. I moderated a forum with him on foreign policy earlier this week. He's been up here 16 times. 16 trips. And he's plugging away. He's holding the town halls. He's probably the most talented retail campaigner of anybody on both sides. But so far, he really hasn't generated a lot of buzz in the polls. He's going to keep doing it, though. It's still early. It's the end of July. Somebody else who's doing it the New Hampshire way as well as Chris Christie, keep your eyes on him, and that's John Kasich, returning to New Hampshire today. His eighth trip, his second since he announced for president. He is rising in the polls. He's got a lot of buzz going, and he's also running a lot of TV commercials here in the state. That's probably helping, too.
Yeah.
In 2000, I believe John McCain did 104 town halls, so that's quite a bar that he set.
Yeah, well, and also someone who's spending a lot of time here, Gary, maybe I'll turn to you, Bernie Sanders.
Oh, Bernie is back and forth across the border here, right and left. I mean, he certainly is getting an awful lot of attention. He really is, and he's really turning out the crowds. I mean, whether you can translate that into making a real effort to unseat Hillary Clinton's another story, but he's certainly doing a magnificent job of exciting a certain element of the party.
And there was another couple other Democratic candidates in town this week. Lincoln Chafee was here. Is that?
You know what? Listen, I'm going to call Lincoln Chafee the loser of the week. He came to town, and you know what? Nobody knew. Lincoln Chafee's a very serious guy. He was a senator. He was a governor. He was a mayor. But his campaign is basically non-existent. He's getting small crowds. He's like the candidate that nobody knows about. Yes, he was here, but not making much of an impact.
Well, and you mentioned, Paul, it's still early, and yet, and you guys all know this, and yet, Dean, there are those debates coming up next week here in New Hampshire, right? One in New Hampshire, and then the Big E in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah. Monday evening, there's the voters forum. This was the kind of the union leaders' reaction to Fox News controlling the format for the Thursday night debate in Cleveland. It's open to all the candidates. It's going to be there's at least 14 or 15.
14.
14 for sure. I thought maybe even more. You got to wonder, even for a 2-hour show, what the format is going to be like. That Donald Trump won't be there
at the first one in New Hampshire,
right? Because he said the union leader's not going to endorse him anyway, so
Trump
it's not going to
be. Won't be there, and Gilmore got in too late to make the cut. It's going to be a round robin. One candidate at a time will go up to the stage and be questioned for about 5 minutes, and they'll over 2 hours they'll probably get through two rounds of questions. Yeah. But it's one candidate at a time. It's a forum, not a debate.
Okay. Well, you're listening to The Exchange, the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. Let's check in with our summer car raffle. If we could talk just a little bit more about the pre-debate forum that you mentioned, Paul, and just remind us again, this isn't 10 guys and a gal, if you count Carly Fiorina. It's not 10 people going at each other. It's person by person by person. What's the sort of thinking behind the organization of this? Sort of the goal of this is to get everybody up there.
Yeah, but as Dean said, the goal also was, the union leader and a lot of people in New Hampshire were furious with what Fox News was doing with the criteria, which was only allowing 10 candidates and also using national polling, not state polling. So this was, I think, McQuaid's way and New Hampshire's way of saying, we still matter. We still have some clout. And look what's happened. Almost the entire field showing up.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The only two real major candidates that aren't showing up are Trump and Huckabee, So everybody else is going to be there. We saw it before, people trying to marginalize New Hampshire. And I think that's the way that Joe McQuaid looked at it. I mean, you're not going to try to marginalize us by, bypassing the people in New Hampshire and the people of Iowa and the people of South Carolina. I mean, we are going to be part of this decision and a key part of this decision.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, too, because the way McQuaid and the union leader have set this up, it's not just a New Hampshire forum. They've also included media from the other two states. They're trying to make it all the early states.
South Carolina and Iowa.
But we all need to be careful because, remember, there, as much as New Hampshire prides itself on being the first in-nation primary state, it's not a God-given right, and it can be taken away from the par by the parties. They've talked about this many, many cycles. They've never done it. But who knows what's going to happen in the future?
Well, and Fox even said, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, this is a way for us, to winnow the field, you know, and take it away from New Hampshire. So people kind of bristled at that. But you're right, Paul. It's not a God-given right.
No, as much as New Hampshire takes this right extremely seriously and does a very good job with it, as does Iowa, to a degree South Carolina, yeah, it can be taken away because there are plenty of other states that say, hey, and they've said this in the past, why can't we go first? Why are two states like Iowa and New Hampshire, which have basically no minority voters and are not representative of the entire nation as a whole, why do they get to go first?
And very small states, too.
And these challenges tend to go in cycles. They'll have one or two cycles where everything seems precarious and there's a lot of front loading and states are moving up. And then it just sort of calms down for a while. It feels like right now, anyway, we're in sort of a little bit of a calmer part of the cycle.
Thank God.
That could, you know, we haven't had a New Hampshire primary in February in a long time. They've been in January the last two. So, you know, we'll see. So, you know, I think the reporting out of this forum on Monday will be, you know, who got the best reception, who had the most clever statement, et cetera. I mean, that's really what you typically get out of these kinds of events, but it's not a debate. And it's going to be long. I'm sure, you know, there are lots of opportunities to watch it. I think MUR, C-SPAN, a number of streaming services. I think iHeartRadio is going to have
NH1.
NH1, okay.
Even before MUR. Give me some love, Dean. Okay. Give me some love.
And HPR will be broadcasting it to people.
Yeah, everybody. There we go. Okay, everybody.
We love this. It's like sports. We don't have a major sports team. We have the New Hampshire primary. Go ahead, Dean. Finish up. I have a question for you, Gary.
Yeah, no. So you know, we'll see. I've said many times before, I think there's too much emphasis on the impact of these debates. I think a lot of the impact of these debates is often sort of transient. You get a little bump or you don't, and then people move on to other things. But next week, between Monday and Thursday, it's going to be sort of the most heavily kind of prognosticated, analyzed moment in the primaries thus far, I think, just because everybody is so focused on these two events on the Republican side.
Yeah, it'd be nice for people to hear from some of these candidates.
Yeah,
there's
an opportunity.
Gary.
Well, I think it's very interesting that, you know, that most of these people are showing up, even though it's kind of a strange forum. And, you know, you're going to have to really shine to make an impact, particularly with all those people coming up the stage behind you. And so you're going to have people, you're going to have the pressure on, and it's going to be kind of interesting to see who really comes through and who doesn't, who's prepared and who isn't.
Well, it's an opportunity again for voters to take a peek at these folks. And Dean, you said something I'm going to pick on you just a little bit. You kind of question whether these debates matter.
Yep.
But there have been moments, right, in presidential primary history where, wow, one line can either sink a campaign or vault it. Rick Perry's oops moment.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot more problems than just the oops moment. But, yeah, no, it is true. There are these sort of classic moments that get kind of memorialized and we go back to them time and again, you know, but sort of overall, you know, I think kind of the impact of these debates, you know, it's temporary, I think, for the most part. But we love them. We like to watch them. And this will be, but, you know, 14 candidates, that's going to be an endurance test for the audience.
Make some popcorn right now. All right. Well, more Friday New Hampshire News Roundup in just a moment on NHPR. This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. You can join us as we look at some of the top Granite State stories this week. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Paul Steinhauser, political director, political correspondent, anchor for NH1 News. Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader in New Hampshire Sunday News, and Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And gentlemen, let's turn to a subject area where I am not that well-versed, but even I have heard of this story, Deflategate. Gary Reno, we've talked about this before on the show. This has to do with whether the Patriots had their football slightly underinflated during that big Super Bowl win. The story's been going on for a long time, so what's new?
Well, what's new is that Tom Brady appealed his four-game suspension, and the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, released his decision this week, which was the suspension stands and Tom Brady is going to be missing four games. What was interesting about the whole thing, however, was that they released some information that hadn't come out before, which was that Tom Brady destroyed his cell phone when this was right after, or just as he was about to be interviewed by the investigator.
That sounds like evidence.
That's like destroying evidence. Yes, that's what it usually is called, is destroying evidence, and which is, we know, is a crime if you do it in the criminal arena.
So, and by the way, I stand corrected. As I said, not a sports person. It was an AFC championship game, not a Super Bowl. Sorry about that, football fans. But so, guys, like, who destroys their cell phone when they're in the middle of an investigation? Who does that?
Tom Brady had said this is a regular practice of his, I guess, for security purposes. And he ordered, in this case, right as he was about to meet with the investigators, he ordered his assistant to destroy his phone. He said he switched, I think, from a Samsung to an Apple iPhone. And this is something he does regularly for security purposes. It seems like a little bit of a coincidence, but we'll see. So now this is all moving to court in New York. The NFL Players Association filed suit in Minnesota, seeking to overturn the suspension, but the NFL had already filed suit in New York to uphold the suspension. And
wow.
So because they filed first, everything has to be moved to New York. So this is all going to go into the courts now. I guess Brady is probably looking for an injunction so that he can play at the beginning of the season.
Brady said in a Facebook posting this week that he did nothing wrong, and the team owner, Robert Kraft, standing behind him. Listen, you know how big a story this is in New England? I mean, this is such a big story. This broke. The NFL's ruling broke on the day that I got that Hillary Clinton interview. I thought for sure, yeah, I'm going to be the lead tonight. Right? I finally got Hillary Clinton. Yep, the flake cake went right ahead of me. Yep, that's how big this is. The story.
Well,
up
his
here.
Legacy is really at stake here. I think a lot of people, here's a top quarterback. First ballot Hall of Famer, and now, as we've seen with other famous players and others here in NFL and other sports, you suddenly find your legacy being questioned.
I mean, it's such a big story here in New England that they actually had to have some police protection of Roger Goodell's home in Maine, his summer home in Maine.
Really? Wow. Wow, big deal. Okay, well, again, when you're not someone who follows this stuff regularly, it's pretty eye-opening and full employment for lawyers, it sounds like, anyway, with all the court stuff you talked about, Dean. So here's another Boston/New England sports story that caught a lot of people's attention, and that's Boston not winning the Olympics, the 2024 Boston effort that people down there, some people, were excited about. We've got some Facebook commentary on this. Tom says, I know very few people who were in favor of it. It would have been nice to have the Olympics finance an overhaul of the T, but as a friend pointed out, can you imagine the delays? Look at how they handled snow. So Tom's glad they didn't get it. Ray says, please, the Olympics are a big, expensive boondoggle that would have cost everybody in the region a lot with very little long-term economic impact. So there's Ray. But then Patricia says, it would have been great for New Hampshire. Think of thousands who would have visited us when they came over for the games, and it wouldn't have cost New Hampshire anything. Again, that's just a sampling of our Facebook commentary on Boston losing out on the Olympics.
That's
Paul?
A great point, though, because New Hampshire is really probably the biggest loser here, because the games were going to be in Boston. All the headaches, all the money that was going to have to be spent. And that's why they said no eventually, because they didn't want taxpayers to be on the hook there. We up here were going to benefit big time for no down payment, but
come here,
not
tax-free
happening.
Shopping, yes. Pretty mountains, pretty lakes. Yeah. I mean, Dean, what do you think?
The main thing that I heard from people was, oh, good, now there'll be finally a way to overhaul the T, which is what most people seem to want, is a subway system to be fixed up. You know, I think that the opponents in Boston look at the gigantic price tag of recent Olympics, billions and billions and billions of dollars, often leaving cities in some financial disarray as a result of all the outlays. And I think there was a concern that in the end, taxpayers would get stuck with the bill, that it just was not – the infrastructure couldn't handle it. It was going to be too expensive, too congested, et cetera, et cetera. So L.A., which had the Olympics, what, 80, 30 years ago?
A while
ago?
Back,
yeah.
Yeah,
80, in the 80s maybe, has now stepped in and said, you know, we'll take it.
Wow.
Or we'll be the U.S. Candidate.
Right,
so
and then they'll pick someone from
yes.
that. Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
And I think there was some problem with the committee that was trying to put this together. They were being a little too secretive, a little less than transparent about it. And, I mean, ultimately, the new mayor of Boston, Walsh, pulled the plug on the city's involvement, pretty much.
Yeah, we did a whole show on this, and it did seem like, at least early on, Gary, referencing what you said, there wasn't enough buy-in from the broad populace. Right. In Boston. And then the committee tried to be more transparent and reaching out and, right. you know, sort of up their PR game, but maybe it was too late.
It seems like if you're going to try something like that, you really have to go out and get the people behind you before you go in there and make this sort of presentation. It seems like they got the cart before the horse.
Well, and they promoted all the sports arenas that the colleges have and so forth. And certainly there are some fantastic pools and tracks and so forth. And you got the Charles River for the rowers and so forth. But Boston's a tough city to get around. It's an old city. I mean, my goodness, it was built in the era of people traveling by horse. So it's kind of tough to see how they would make that happen. Well, sorry, Boston. You're still a great town. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. Join us as we cover some of the top stories of the week. And just a few more stories, gentlemen, and then I do want to find out what you guys are up to next week. Dean Spiliotis, in my hometown, a sticky situation in Keene. What happened?
Yeah, a tractor trailer apparently coming from Vermont with a load of maple syrup. Apparently the load shifted and started to slowly leak all over the road. And something like 220 gallons of maple syrup were spilled on the roadways. And
wow.
you think about trying to clean that up. Apparently they had to use squeegees and, interestingly enough, kitty litter to help dry it up. It's not something I would think about necessarily, and maybe I don't have a cat, but if I were to spill maple syrup in the future, maybe I'll borrow some kitty litter from my neighbors. But yeah, so 220 gallons on the road, squeegees and kitty litter to clean it up.
Oh my
gosh.
They
actually even had to salt the road because I guess it was still even after they cleaned it up, it was pretty
slippery.
Throw
some bacon down on there.
And they said,
pavement,
the motorcyclists particularly had to be careful out there.
Well, in all seriousness, it's a sticky substance and you don't want to drive over that thing at, 45, 50 miles an hour.
We can make a lot of puns here, but we've all been very good about
that. Yeah, that's right. I think we'll avoid that.
Congratulations.
Here's an email from Rob who says, what I find most curious about Deflategate is the fact that Tom Brady destroyed a phone, maybe destroying evidence of wrongdoing, and there is a major media outcry. Rob says, Hillary Clinton destroys a server, maybe destroying evidence of wrongdoing, and it's crickets from the media. So there he is making the connection between Tom Brady's cell phone. And Paul, I'm going to turn to you on this controversy over Hillary Clinton not being completely honest about where those emails came from while she was at the State Department. He's making a connection there.
He is making a connection. I will disagree, though, in that the Hillary Clinton story has been getting a lot of coverage.
That
not
media
just
has
by
crickets.
Conservative outlets. I mean, obviously, conservative outlets are going to be have been taking the lead on this story. But remember, even some progressive outlets like the New York Times have been covering this story. So, yeah, she there have not been crickets when it comes to that story.
Yeah. What do you think about this, Dean? Is this going to be a problem for Hillary Clinton? This has been discussed for a long time.
It's been going on for a long time. I think it's going to continue. I mean, they've sort of said what they're going to say. I mean, she's going to testify, I think, in Congress in the fall, so that may add a new layer to it. Her campaign was recently State Department, rather, was recently scolded for not releasing emails quickly enough. So this is an ongoing story. I mean, and it just sort of feeds into kind of the Republican attack against her as a candidate. But I agree with Paul. This has been a very big story in the media in recent weeks.
And it'll continue probably this afternoon because the State Department, I believe, is supposed to release another round of those emails today.
The judge ordered.
Okay, there's an update for you, Rob. Thank you very much for the email. And this is a Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. We're checking in now very quickly with our summer car raffle. So, guys, this is my favorite part of the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, where I get to talk a little bit about what we're doing next week on The Exchange and then ask you guys what you're doing next week. I want to let everybody know, next week I will be filling in for Diane Rehm down in Washington.
Nice.
So that is what I am up to next week, doing all sorts of national stuff and probably covering some of the same stories that we cover nationally here in New Hampshire. So that's what I'm up to. Dean Spiliotis is going to be sitting in the host chair here next week. And we've got some great shows planned for you as well, Dean. But Gary Vino, how about you? What are you up to next week?
Well, I'm going to be sitting somewhere else because I'm going to be on vacation too.
Good. You won't be at the State House.
I will not be on vacation.
Well, but just remind us, Gary, there's not a lot going on at the State House
right
now.
What is going on Wednesday, though, is the Executive Council meeting. And it's a possibility that this whole Planned Parenthood contract comes up on Wednesday. And not only that, there's also a managed health care, one of the huge contracts for that. Is also still out there. That
for
might
Medicaid
be,
managed care
for the Medicaid system.
Yeah,
and that's also out there.
That you're not going to cancel your vacation for that?
I am not.
Okay, right. Someone else will have to do it. What do you have to
say,
Paul?
Though, every time there's an executive council meeting now, I think of the 2016 gubernatorial election, because if Maggie Hassel runs for re-election, and sitting right next to her in those meetings is Chris Sununu, who looks more and more likely like he's going to run. So those meetings are getting more interesting every time.
They're getting longer anyway.
There you go.
There you go. How about you, Paul?
A busy week. We got to cover the forum on Monday. The voters first forum here in New Hampshire. It's going to be a very long day, but an interesting one. And then I'm off later in the week to Cleveland to cover the first presidential debate on the Republican side.
Oh, cool. So you are going to Cleveland to cover that.
I'm going to do a little bit of travel. I mean, the whole idea for me to come up here was to stay in New Hampshire, but I got to travel a little bit.
Sure. Well, that's a big event for New Hampshire, for
big event.
Sure.
Very big,
absolutely. All right. Well, good luck with that. And Dean Spiliotis.
I'll be here Wednesday through Friday. Wednesday, we're going to talk about the future of the Eurozone. Thursday, we're going to talk about immigration in the presidential campaign. And then Friday, we'll have the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. And I'm sure we'll talk about that Thursday night debate in Cleveland.
All right. Wonderful. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for helping us out. Paul Steinhauser, good to see you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Paul Steinhauser, political director and anchor for NH1 News. Gary Reno, have a lovely vacation.
Well,
thank you for being
here.
And
have a great time in Washington.
Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader in New Hampshire Sunday News. And Dean, thank you for filling in, and thank you for being here today.
Sure thing, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. This is The Exchange on NHPR.